Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. With 2 weeks to go before Election Day, what have we learned about the men running for president this year? Last night's foreign policy debate completed the series of three head-to-head events between incumbent President Barack Obama and challenger Governor Mitt Romney. The matchup may not have shifted the positions of strongly partisan voters, but it did give Americans a chance to see each man articulate his ideas on foreign policy, at least as it regards China, Iran, and the Middle East. Joining us to talk about last night and about how this nail-bitingly close race may be influencing campaign messaging for the Romney and Obama campaigns are journalists Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News. Guys, welcome back to Think.
Good to be back.
Great to be here.
Okay, if you each had to describe last night in a word or two or a sentence, let's give you that. Given the look of alarm on both of your faces.
It's over. How about that? Does that work?
No. I know. Two more weeks. Are you both thinking, thank God this is about be over?
All right. Yes, I am. I'm ready for it to be over, and it will be. And it actually has passed really fast for me. I mean, between summer and now, it seemed to have gone by so quickly. But I'm really waiting for it to be over.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you know, this isn't a word, but at this point, what do the undecideds need to know that they haven't heard already? And so the only undecideds I can think of would be those who were for Obama before and are wondering if they should switch their votes, or people who are just truly betwixt and between and don't know which way to go. And as my dad used to tell me when I was a kid growing up, you know, you got to root for one team at one point. You can't root for both. So you got to make your mind up sooner. You know, so all the information is out there. Make your mind up.
Well, I frankly thought that Mitt Romney was so complacent and so disengaged throughout most of the debate. I wondered what the strategy was. I assume there was a strategy, and some people tell me there was a strategy. But for me, throughout the debate, it looked like a schoolboy who had come to class without his homework.
Well, the analysis I heard was that Mr. Romney really just had to demonstrate that he knew what he was talking about. Did he succeed there?
To me, he didn't. I mean, because other than saying I agree with the president about 80% of the time on some of the foreign policy issues, I didn't sense that he did grasp what foreign policy was all about. I felt he was out of his league on that issue, and he knew that he was out of his league. And if his strategy was to do no harm, perhaps he did no harm. But I didn't see him do help on the foreign policy. I mean, he did try to switch it back to the domestic issues, particularly on the economy. And I guess you could give him some points for that. But other than that, I didn't get it.
Not surprising. We disagree here. I thought Romney was moderate and measured. He didn't come out guns blazing. He wasn't playing the neocon card, neoconservative, hawkish, hardliner that people feared he would.
Unlike before.
Fine. Okay. Well, we'll get to the flip-flop in a minute.
Okay.
But I wrote a note myself. He reminded me some of George H.W. Bush as I was listening to him. I mean, he had the line, we can't kill everybody. He talked about trying to refashion, restructure the Muslim world through what? Better education, gender equality, foreign aid. He was talking about soft power the whole time. I thought he, you know, and I get tired of the whole style thing, but I thought he was presidential looking in terms of just being measured and in the way he presented himself. And that's harder for the challenger to do.
Presidential looking.
Take a deep breath.
it's been amazing to me to see how people have tried to position what Romney was doing. I mean, how the spin has gone. And I'm not saying you, Bill, by any means, was trying to spin. But I don't get this presidential looking just by not doing anything and agreeing with your
opponent. But he didn't look like a hothead.
Well, no, he didn't look like a hothead. But again, that was such a shift from where he has been on Iran, on Afghanistan, on China, on every issue that came up that I've heard him in the last 2 months even talk about doing things differently, doing things better, doing things greater than what the president has done. What's the difference?
Right. Well, I would say, and I'm going to quote David Brooks in the New York Times here, you could call him a hypocrite.
Yes.
But if you're in the moderate part of the spectrum, you could also call it progress. So, you know, he's moving towards the middle, which I would argue is much better than just trying to play in foreign policy the hawkish card. And, you know, he is not saying we're going into all these world's hotspots, barging in and making our presence known. He talked about Syria, where, you know, frankly, I can see the case for arming some of the rebels. But
Which
he's
ones?
Not. Well, true. But he's not doing that.
Right. And I agree with you. But what took him so long, number one? And do you think that really plays to those, quote, undecided moderates out there?
Well, let me dive in here because it struck me that something similar happened to the first debate. And certainly I think President Obama did vastly better in this one than he did in the first one. But in both cases, it almost seems like the president was geared up for the arguments he had heard from the Romney campaign for some time before. And then when Mr. Romney came in with more moderate positions, it sort of took the steam, the wind out of the sails of some of the counter arguments that the president might have made.
You're saying last night or the first
debate? Last night and the first debate.
Yeah, right. Although I do think that Obama looked kind of ticked during last night to me, and I may be wrong. He had that stern look, and he was sitting right across the table, and he was just eyeballing him through the whole time.
And I thought Governor Romney looked tired
at the same time. Right. So, but I thought Obama he knew his brief, and he was trying to say, well, you've been all these things, and, you know, which is it? And so I thought he was doing a fairly good job of saying, well, this is what you said before. Here's where you are now. Which is it?
And again, I mean, my question is, if I'm the undecided voter, whoever that is, does that appeal to me that suddenly he has become the moderate that many of us knew him to be to begin with, but he hasn't been throughout this campaign, at least until a week ago or 2 weeks ago? Does that make me feel good about him, that he's suddenly confessing to being what he has been denying?
Right. I think that, and I'm going to answer that in a second, but I think this election still is just about economics, and it's going to be about who's going to get the debt under control, who's going to grow the economy, and I think that is what it will come down to for a lot of people more than it will what we heard last night. But to your point, I remember doing an interview with somebody who knew Romney, worked with Romney 30 years ago, and said, you know, and he liked him. He said, I am a Democrat. I want Obama. He knew him. He knew him personally. And he described him as his worry was he didn't have a core and that he was like a corporate salesman who could go out and sell the goods that the company needs. Now, there is a problem there if you are if you don't have a core, and I concede that. I don't know the man. I've met him once. I've interviewed him once. So I don't know why to speak to that. But if he comes back down to the side, which I would argue is where he should be and the Republican Party should be, and that's more in the center, I guess in some level, I don't care how he got there. He's getting there, and I think that's the important part.
Okay. You know, and you just reminded me that I'm old enough to remember his father, and I have family in Detroit who loved his father, actually. And what I see in him, I don't see that father.
Right.
I don't see – when you said core, that's what I thought of. George Romney had a core. And he could relate to those people that Romney doesn't seem to relate to me. And I see him so different. And when you talk about, you know, speaking to the economics, I thought the president did a better job of coming back to the economics, particularly in those swing states and more particularly in Ohio, of making that case, where were you, Mr. Romney, when these people were depending on something being done for General Motors, for the auto industry? Where were you?
Yeah.
And Mitt Romney was not there except in that, you know, disengaged way of trying to appeal to the Tea Party or whomever and saying, you know, let Detroit go bust.
Right.
That, you know, that could not appeal to the people of Ohio.
But going forward, what do you do to grow the economy, to improve the situation? That was 3 or 4 years ago. What about now? And I do think here's where I think the Romney camp has been taking it to the Obama camp. In that it's hard to really know what Obama wants to do for the next 4 years. Whereas Romney will tell you, I want to flatten the tax code. I'm going to work on controlling the debt. He has made it a central issue. I don't see Obama doing the same thing.
All with math that doesn't work. I want to flatten the tax tax code math that doesn't work. But please tell me, what is he going to do? I still don't know.
The Wall Street Journal had a piece on this the other day, and that was arguing that Governor Romney actually has the best articulated plan of any presidential candidate in recent years, because he threw out the figure at the last debate about $25,000 as the ceiling for tax deductions, and he has talked about the ways he would adjust capital gains taxes. That's not enough detail for you?
No, it's not, because still, when you talk about doing everything that he says he wants to do, including adding to the military another $1 trillion worth of spending that the military is not asking for, by the way, how do you pay for that? I mean, I'm not getting how you pay for that. I don't know how you get the tax cuts and the spending in the military and don't do anything to the middle class and pay for what you're going to do.
But
I don't get it.
But I think what all these candidates are doing, they're putting down benchmarks. They know they're going to have to go and work and negotiate. And I thought it was very instructive. Paul Ryan gave an interview to the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago where he said, look, you know, you don't go in and tell the other side, here's our plan, take it or leave it. So they know they're going to have to negotiate. They aren't going to get all the tax reform they want. They're going to have to negotiate on the Pentagon. They know that. Those are the things they're going to have to do and give and take. And I think they are putting it out in a clear way. Here's what we want to try to do.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the broad-based kind of plan, and you know, you have to go to the Congress and work with the Congress. And apparently there are people who think that Romney somehow would be a better person working with the Congress, particularly if there are more Republicans in the House. And I'm not sure of that one way or the other. But again, working with the Congress and coming up with what is still the question that I have. And if you want Obama to be specific, why can't you demand the same specificity from Romney?
Right. And I would argue, I don't think Obama is being specific in ways that he would really cut government. When he talks about, here's my $4 trillion in savings, what he's counting in there is a large chunk, and I forget the amount, but I think it's like $2 billion, from savings in the wars. And
exactly.
Nobody is counting that as reducing government. It's just money that you weren't going to be spending. So he's not telling you really how he'd overhaul things. He said zip, zero, nada about what he'd do about reforming Medicare, other than changing the Medicare Advantage plan. So we really don't know what he's going to do on that, and he's not going to do anything on Social Security. And he's had 4 years, and he hadn't done anything on entitlements.
All right, let me jump in here and talk about unemployment, because much has been made about the fact that no incumbent president gets to keep his job if the U.S. unemployment rate is up over 8%. Last month, we saw it come down to 7.9% or 7.8% for the first time. Is this enough? Is it too little, too late? What do you think?
Well, again, when you talk about trending, you have to look at the trend. Is it going in the right direction, coming down? Many people say yes, it's coming down. And keep in mind that no president since Roosevelt has had to face what this country has faced or this president has faced in terms of the economy. No president. So when you say no president been elected with this kind of employment rate, we haven't had what we had have now since, you know, the 1930s. So, I think it's going to be enough in the sense that, yes, it's trending the right way. In Ohio right now is 7%, which is the lowest they've had in God knows how long. But it's because they save the auto industry.
Well, I would say if I were an unemployed worker, that still wouldn't be good enough, and I wouldn't like that. If I were the Obama people, I'd be clicking my heels in the headquarters.
My guests this hour are William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News and Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We will continue our post-debate election analysis in a few minutes. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
History, literature, and film courses in October take you from Renaissance Italy to the American character. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking about post-debate election analysis with Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News. You can jump in on this conversation at 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Okay, I'm aware that you both have but one X chromosome, but I want to talk a little bit about the relentless appeal to women and how you think that might be playing out, according to the people that you've spoken with and all that. Is it working? Are both candidates really getting to the things that women care most about? And we'll start with you, Bill.
Well, I think that Obama still will do the best here. Wall Street Journal poll yesterday showed that the women voters are still breaking for him. I think it's 51-43. So I don't think that Romney did enough in any of the debates to probably move that seriously. I think that's one reason he probably was a more moderate, measured Mitt last night. Because he may be trying to reassure people that he women that he's not going to be a an extreme hawk in the world, but I think on issues that social issues that probably enough women are not going to be changing their minds with him on abortion or any other type of issue where he's taken a stand that more moderate to liberal women favor. I just think he's not going to win them. And so I still think this is going to be a stronghold for Obama, and they know it. And that's why the Latinos and women are the ones that they're really banking on to win. And my gut, my instinct is probably what Romney is doing is just trying to chip away enough into the suburban women vote that he can limit how much Obama is getting.
I would tend to agree with that. I think with the gap in the white male vote that Romney has in leading Obama, that he thinks that he can bring down even to a small degree, I mean 3 or 4 points, that gap that between him and Obama with the women's vote, that he has a chance in some of those swing states. I'm not sure that's going to happen. And of course, and like I say, I'm not a woman, and so I don't know what necessarily appeals, but I just got to think that it's not going to happen in 1 or 2 debates or some special advertising or 2 or 3 speeches. Unfortunately, the Republican brand has been so anti-woman in terms of successful women, smart women, women who are working, women who are out there raising families and doing things that just 30 years ago, many of them would not be doing. I don't see how that brand appeals to today's woman.
Right. And I would agree. You brought up George Romney, his father, and I would agree with you that the party has changed from the days of George Romney and Romney's mother, whose name I forget, who also ran for office and lost. And she ran as a moderate liberal Republican. So it has changed some. However, if you're unemployed or if you're somebody in your family is unemployed, that is what you're going to care about a lot. And so you may be listening to a candidate who may not share your views on social issues or cultural issues, but you are concerned about the economic future, and that could get into your mind.
Yeah, and the economic future with a party that supports unequal pay for women. I mean there's so many issues there, and it's not just one issue that women are dealing with. They're dealing with a whole lot of issues in this framework of economics. And I just don't see how Romney appeals to them, except from saying, I'm not going to send your sons and your husbands to war.
Do you really feel, though, Bob Ray, that the Republicans actively support unequal pay for women?
You know what? Go by the actions. Go by the votes. I haven't seen it. I mean, they're so, I think, in bed with corporate America that everything they do for corporate America sometimes goes against individuals, oftentimes goes against individuals. That includes women. It includes regular men. It includes folk who are out there. It includes minorities who have been trying to break through some of these ceilings in corporate America. Their actions speak louder than what they say. And sometimes they even say it, you know.
But you need corporate America growing jobs. And so you're going to need to make sure that corporate America is not, you know, overregulated. I'm not arguing for no regulation, but you're going to have to find the sweet spot on regulation. You're going to have to find the sweet spot in tax rates. And you're going to have to simplify the tax code so they're employing as many accountants to comply with it so you can go out and grow jobs. And those corporations, they employ lots of different kinds of people.
Yes, they do. And sometimes they don't employ people. And sometimes
correct.
And sometimes what they do is, in order to take care of those shareholders and others, they fire a lot of people. They lay off a lot of people. And then, the corporate heads get great right. bonuses for doing that because that's how they get to the bottom line. You know, I just don't see corporate America being that benevolent beast out there that's looking out for everybody other than their shareholders.
All right. To return to last night, one second. I think that both candidates did a good job arguing that, look, we need a strong domestic scene to be able to be the strong player
sure.
internationally. This Henry Kissinger years ago made the argument that, you know, that's what you need a strong domestic policy to have a strong foreign policy because you can't have it without it. And I was glad to see both of them emphasize this. No surprise here. I think Romney had kind of the edge because I think he is more in tune what I think we kind of need to be doing on the debt. But I applaud both of them for trying to make that. Now, they got a little far afield in teacher unions and all that sort of stuff, and they're clearly using that last debate to speak to niches and to audiences, and I get that. But by and large, they were trying to make this connection, and I thought they did a good job, and I'm glad they did that.
Okay, phone lines are filling up here at 1-800-933-5372. We have Aditya on the line in Richardson. Hi, Aditya.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
So far what I've noticed is Mitt Romney, like, micro-targets to a lot of people, and he seems to just change his opinion. Has this ever happened before, and is this, like, okay to... Because everyone on the right thinks, like, oh, he's just pandering to them. He's really a conservative. And everyone in the middle are like, oh, he's just pandering to the conservatives. He's really a moderate. And no one can really know. So is the system okay for electing? You understand my question?
Right. Well, the question is, he's changed his mind, and so is that acceptable? Well, you know, there have been many candidates that have changed their mind over time, and sometimes you want them to change their mind. They recognize mistakes, and they move on and move to a different position. John Kerry got beat up in 2004 by the Bush people for being a flip-flopper on his votes on Iraq. And so, you know, he's not the first. George H.W. Bush, you know, look at him in 1988. He ran a hard Willie Horton ACLU flag-waving campaign and then came back in and governed pretty much in a center-right position. And so, yeah, it happens. And as I said earlier, if they're moving to where I think they ought to be, I will call that progress. And so if Romney is moving to the center-right, the moderate, I say, come on over. Just stay there.
But usually that happens right after the convention. Okay, we know that you have to do certain things to get the nomination. We understood that. I mean, I understood that about Mitt Romney this time around. So if you're going to change, you start the change immediately after the convention and you start going out there trying to get the broader appeal. Romney literally has changed in the last 2 weeks on some of these issues.
Not really. I mean, he started, when was the first debate? Early October, something like that?
Well, so I think
he started
October 3rd.
Yeah. So
okay,
he came
3 weeks instead of two.
Well,
okay.
But he came out looking, you know, surprised everybody and looked more center-right, more moderate.
Okay. I agree. But as you said, John Kerry was panned for flip-flopping. And again,
right.
the administration hasn't made that point over and over and over again. They've made it some, as
right.
he did in the debate last night. But talk about flip-flop. This
yeah.
is classic
yeah.
flip-flop.
Right. All right. But if we're going to bore in on Romney's lack of a core, which I can see, that's a challenge for him.
Yes.
You're going to have to, though, to deal with the issue that a lot of people, even within his own party, argue that Barack Obama is really not a natural politician and that he really is too diffident and too much of the constitutional lawyer professor who doesn't like to rub elbows. He's not Bill Clinton. He's not working the phones. He's not up there on Capitol Hill. He doesn't get in the web and woof of politics enough because he's taken his own counsel too much. So there we go.
Do we expect too much of every president? I mean, it's sincerely here. I'm talking about both candidates here. I mean, you want Mitt Romney to be a brilliant business guy and yet be completely in touch with people who are making, you know, $17,000 a year and trying to raise a family. You want Barack Obama to be warm and someone that you can relate to, and yet you want him to sort of be tough on certain things.
Right.
I mean, have we gotten to the point where what we expect of anyone running for president is more than being a human being?
Short answer, yes.
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 What do we do about that? Is that our fault in the media?
That's our fault to a degree. I mean, I think that's the electorate's fault. I mean, we expect this superhuman being to come forth, and yet we still want him in touch with us. We still want him to feel like the guy that we can go out and have a beer with, the guy who we can invite to dinner, and he won't upset everybody at the table.
The deity, just like us.
Yeah. But we want that. And yes, and the media buys into that because we help tell the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we help form these folk, and sadly they're the false image that we get stuck with, and nobody can live up to it, basically.
Right, and I think, you know, look at these debates. We in the media spend a lot of time talking about their style, and that kind of feeds into this: is he a nice guy? Is he not? And all that. So yeah, I think we contribute to it, and. Bob Ray, I think earlier said to me that gets down, what is the bottom line? What are you doing for people? And, you know, look, Richard Nixon was a schmo and Richard Nixon was a crook, but Richard Nixon also created the EPA. He opened up relations with China. So you had a guy you didn't really particularly want to be on a long plane flight with, but he got some good things done.
I totally agree.
Small thing here, and you mentioned style, and this is trivial maybe, but you know, it seems that a Democratic candidate will never again wear a purely red tie to do a debate, and a Republican candidate will never wear a purely blue one. Last night, Governor Romney had one that was mostly red, but had some blue stripes in it. Do you think there's thought that even goes into something as simple as that?
Yes.
Sure.
That blue suit and the color of the tie definitely plays into it. And from day one, of course, and they both had makeup. So they learned that from the 1960 campaign.
They're not going to go Nixon ever again.
Yeah. I remember H. Ross Perot, when we first did a debate here at KERA years ago, refused to make up the first time he was on. The second time he was on, he asked for it.
Mm-hmm.
So you do learn things about that. How you look, how you present yourself, that comes across. Right. And it is important. But I'm still into the substance. I want that. And I know there are people basing their judgment of this debate and others on the style, on the perception that this guy looks presidential. Tell me what he said and what he's going to do before you tell me what he looks like and how cool he was under the lights.
All right, let's take another call. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. We have Dee calling in from Arlington. Hi, Dee.
Good afternoon. My thing is with the constant talk about reducing the overall X amount for the working class people. In the tax preparations, in the federal tax form booklet, the taxable income based on the filing status can easily be reduced. If they really want to do that, I see they can do that. And what a lot of people don't understand, corporations and, of course, small business owners, the country and the whole entire world is so linked together and tied in. Whatever you do to affect one class of people, it's going to affect the other class. So it's no way to not affect those class of people. It's like a chain and a link. So I don't know why they won't go ahead and just reduce the overall taxable income amount and just change it in the federal book. And as far as paying for it, they haven't ever completely paid off the federal deficit, so I don't think it's going to make that much immediate difference. So can someone kind of explain why that's just not done for me, please? And I'll end the call.
Thanks for your call.
Well, I'm certainly not an expert on tax law, but I know enough to know that the loopholes, all of the special things in there for you and me, for that matter, but certainly for businesses, the number of write-offs that you can have, yes, if we got rid of a lot of those, we could increase the treasury money, the money that goes into the treasury here. But I mean, all of those loopholes have constituencies, and they fight them. You talk about cutting any one of them, and people start with their millions to say we're not going to do that, and Congress doesn't do it. Imagine cutting the interest rate for your house.
Mortgage interest deduction.
Mortgage interest deduction. wouldn't Americans sort of go crazy over that? I mean, and that's really what you have to cut if you're talking about cutting something seriously, because that's about, among us, you know, poor folk out there. But no, I mean, I don't think it's going to change. I really don't. I mean, there ought to be serious tax reform, but I don't see it coming anytime soon.
You want Mitt Romney?
No, no, I don't.
Why does he want Mitt Romney?
First of all, I don't believe Mitt Romney. I don't believe Mitt Romney.
But he's making the argument. Romney is arguing he wants to broaden the tax base by getting rid of a lot of loopholes. True, he hasn't told you which loopholes he's going to get rid of.
But he's
come up with is what Chris talked about. It will put a cap on the amount of deductions you can get. So, but this simplification of the tax code could perhaps make it possible to A, get more people paying taxes, and B, grow the economy.
You know what's interesting, though, when we talk about simplifying the tax code, we almost never come back to the true bottom line, which is when we talk about closing loopholes but opening up other things, ultimately either we're all paying the same. I think all of us in our minds sort of psychologically think, well, great, I wasn't getting much of a benefit from loopholes, although most of us are here or there, and therefore someone else will be paying their fair share. I wonder sometimes if individuals don't fully comprehend the fact that if we close the loopholes, we'll all in some way or another be affected by this.
Sure.
Yes. Yes. Right. Indeed. I mean, yeah. I mean, the whole flat tax thing. You know, 15%. I could go for that. 20%. Whatever it is. But as soon as you start talking about that, you start talking about, okay, what are the exceptions?
Mm-hmm.
It never comes down to a pure flat tax. There are always the exceptions. You got to take care of Exxon and all those people because they got to have money to go out and drill and explore. Otherwise, they're not going to do it. Well, I don't believe that either, but that's what they argue. That's what they pay for, their lobbyists for, to make sure they get those. But, we benefit from certain things.
Right. Well, I don't think we're going to do away with the mortgage deduction. There may be a change to it or a limit. I don't think we're going to do away with the charitable contribution thing. We may limit it. But there will be a few left. Sure, there's never going to be a completely flat tax. But you want to do away with enough of them so you have a more efficient code. And I go back to this thing. If you just put a cap and say, okay, everybody gets X amount, and you figure out which ones you want to get, I'm interested in that.
Never going to happen.
We are speaking with Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News. We'll take more of your calls after the break. The number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. History, literature, and film courses in October take you from Renaissance Italy to the American character. And you can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News and Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram about the upcoming election. Just 2 weeks to go until final ballots have been cast. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org. You know, I meant to look this up before we came in here this afternoon, but do you know how much money is left, relatively speaking, in each set of campaign coffers?
I do not.
I heard that Romney has about $180 million and Obama has a little less than that. They're fairly close, but it's about – and they've been spending a lot in this last month.
In Ohio and Florida and Pennsylvania.
That's where it's all going. But they each have around $170, $180 million left to spend.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Glenn in Fort Worth. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a comment, and I'll take the answer response off the air. I don't think enough gets said, and I don't think Romney does a very good job himself of explaining how his numbers might add up. To buy into what Romney's planning, you really have to buy into two things, I think. One, that it's going to be more distributed, the tax base is going to be larger, and two, that economic growth is going to make up the difference. If you don't think what he's going to do is going to cause economic growth, then you don't buy into what he's talking about. But if you think that his plan will reduce restrictions and enable companies in this country to start hiring again, if you believe that that will create enough growth to overcome the gap, then you buy into his plan. I personally buy into it. I think it speaks volumes that one of your guests described corporate America as the corporate beast. I think that's a very common response or thought amongst a lot of liberals in this country, that they're the bad guys. Without those guys, the government that we have right now would be even more unfunded than they currently are. So I don't think they're the bad guys. I think we need them. We need them desperately to start hiring more people. We need more people working, and we need a broader tax base. I remember seeing when Alex Rodriguez went to New York to play for the New York Yankees from the Texas Rangers, I think he got like $40 million signing bonus or something like that.
Yeah.
And David Letterman did a little skit, like, how do you pay a guy $40 million as a signing bonus? And it showed a guy going up to the ticket booth at Yankee Stadium, and he said, I'll take one ticket, please. And the guy behind the counter said, well, that'll be $40 million.
All right, Glenn, you put a lot on the table there, and I appreciate your call. Thank you so much.
Well, let me respond to because I'm the one.
It was you who said corporate beast.
Beast. And I didn't, really mean that in a pejorative way, even though it probably came out that way. I meant beast, and I mean gigantic institutions who can be good and who can be bad, but and sometimes they are bad. But I think in order to accept Romney, you have to believe him. And I think the caller is right. Many people, including me, just don't believe him. I mean, when you look at his own personal career and all of the advantages that he's had under the tax code and that he's taken full advantage of, we just don't see that person doing for everybody else what he has not done for himself, so to speak, or what he has not done to himself. I just don't believe it, and I think a lot of other people don't believe it. They don't trust him.
But I would argue, don't put it all on whether you believe in him. And the caller is saying is, do you believe if you're going to broaden the base of the tax code of taxpayers and flatten the tax rate some, not in an absolute sense, you're going to grow the economy? And you know, you look at what happened in Germany under Gerhard Schroeder, who was a social democrat, and he went in and tried to restructure some of their entitlement programs, and he also tried to lower some of their tax rates, and that set up Germany to have a stronger economy under Chancellor Merkel today than any other European country. So there is data that would suggest that if you're going to streamline your taxes and try to keep them as lower, particularly lowering some of our corporate tax rate while getting rid of some of these loopholes, that you have a fairly good chance of growing the economy. And you know, if it doesn't work, then we are going to be in trouble. And so that – but I'd also argue to the caller – you need to do that, but you're also going to need to cut spending.
And Obama would argue that just the opposite happened to a degree under Bill Clinton, where, I mean, you see some tax rates raised for some mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. And you had a stronger economy than you would have had
right.
otherwise.
Right. And I would say yes. And I think this is a yes and thing. I think if you want to have a short-term deficit deal, you're probably going to need to raise rates. And this gets very confusing. But if you want to try to bring it down the short term, you're probably going to have to do something like that. But if you want to try to grow the economy over the longer term and therefore tackle the longer term debt, I think you're better off trying to deal with the tax structure as a way to get at this problem.
Well, the other thing we're arguing about here is cause and effect. Was the economy during the Clinton administration fantastic because it was fantastic because you had technological innovations that grew the economy and you had housing values rising? Or was it fantastic because certain tax rates were raised? And you can look at various administrations over time and link to a degree to the economy and link the economy to policy in the
right.
White House,
not
entirely.
I would say it started with George H.W., who passed the tax increase in 1990 that probably cost him, you know, the right wing. And the economy was doing better by the time Clinton came in. Clinton did do the deficit deal. They did raise taxes. They did get to the deficit under more control. But you had all these things going on in Silicon Valley and other places in the technology world. And Clinton did two things. One, he was smart enough not to try to intervene in that. And he understood this globalism. He went out and he explained globalism. And that is a big difference with Obama. Obama sits there. He's going after Romney on outsourcing jobs. Well, you know, what about Apple? What about all these other companies that grow jobs that are contributing to our economy? You know, this is the way the world works. Clinton was very good at explaining that. I don't see Obama doing that. I think he's playing economic nationalism, and I think it's dangerous.
Economic nationalism? Oh, boy,
I got to use this.
No, I think you're right to a degree, and in particular, we talk about the global effect on our own economy, and that's what's changed in more recent years is that, well, I mean, just look at the markets today. I mean, they're reacting some to what's happening with some of the corporations and their earnings and all that, but really reacting to what's going on in Europe still. You know, so what's happening there affects us here. But at the same time, I mean, whether you articulate it or not, I mean, it's cyclical, I think. I mean, the economy, and we know that it comes and it goes. I mean, you know, there's going to be a high, low unemployment, then high unemployment, and no one administration is going to be able to affect that. Same thing with gas prices and things like that. It's not the administration that does it, but certainly policy plays into that. And whose policy do you think will have a greater effect? And it just depends on your philosophy. But, you know, I agree with you that global economy and Bill Clinton is good at explaining things, which is why he'll be out there on the campaign trail a lot in the next 2 weeks.
And if I were Barack Obama, I'd have him right there with me.
And if Gore had used him like he should have, he would have been president.
Exactly.
I don't know, Bob. This is a whole other conversation, but Clinton was sort of poisoned at the point that Al Gore was running.
Well, yeah.
We forget that now. But
I understand it. But I think he could have been helpful.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Scott in Dallas is on the line. Hey, Scott.
Hi. Yeah, I'm sorry. Bill and the low-tax people really don't understand how taxes work. One, capital gains, higher capital gains would discourage speculation and the liquidation of our capital, which is the only thing the lower rates do. Capital-intensive businesses, that capital gains rate is what they get their depreciation back for. And so the only people that benefit are professionals and financiers from low cap gains. Higher top marginal rates on corporations and small businesses, which I've been for 25 years, encourages flight to deductible avenues like hiring, reinvestment, employee benefits, capital investment, research and development, advertising are all deductible and become more desirable the higher the tax rate. Since Reagan, we've seen our manufacturing base decimated, and the jobs offshore, and this is all part of the same thing. Romney wants to double down on Bush's policies, and it's a nightmare.
All right, let's get a response. I appreciate your call, Scott. Thank you.
Just say amen.
Go ahead, man. No, you said amen.
It's a one-word answer from Bob Ray Sanders, my friend.
All right, you go back to John Kennedy. Forget Bush, forget Republicans. What did John Kennedy do in 1962, I believe it was, or 63? He had a pretty serious tax cut plan, which his base didn't like. They didn't talk about base back then, but the liberals didn't like it. And he went in it, and I believe, and I'm not mistaken, he reduced capital gains rates.
Yes,
Reagan reduced capital gains rates. There is data to show that when you reduce the capital gains rates, you're going to see a spur in your economy. Is it sufficient to cure your economic woes? No. But it's one among other variables, if you put them all together, that can have a positive impact on it.
Well, what's the top capital gains rate now, though? It's 15%, right?
I don't know.
Okay. But it's certainly lower than tax rates.
Right. Correct. But our cost of capital compared to other countries is what you need to be thinking about is these companies that are whatever they're doing abroad, they're looking abroad to figure out where to put their money. That makes a difference. And that's something we do need to be thinking of. And I don't have the capital gains rates right here in front of me or in my mind, but I know historically we have been in a place that is disadvantaged compared to some other countries.
I think it's 15% is the top capital gains right now, and the president wants to raise it to 20% for those making over $200,000 a year.
Yeah, the president will go to 28.
28?
I think.
Yeah, 28 or 29, back to the level that it was under Bill Clinton.
Okay, thank you for the correction.
But again, you know, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, and that the last caller is right. You know, we talk about small businesses, and a lot of small businesses are these one-person investment firms. you know, and that's a small business, but yet they're making millions and millions of dollars. So when you talk about helping the small business, I mean, the average small business out there are those people who are you know, the mom and pop stores, and they'll say, mm-hmm. and they're not making over $250,000, not net. I mean, they make get that in terms of gross income, but after they pay the bills and after they pay salaries, they're not making over $250,000. That's who the president's talking about, the 98% of those people. And you don't hear Mitt Romney really talking about those people.
Any chance we're going to get back to a Bush v. Gore sort of debacle after November 6th?
Well, yes. Number one, let's hope we don't get back to a Florida situation. But if you look at these polls, I mean, this thing is getting really, really tight. I don't remember exactly in October 2000 how it felt. It was going to be close. But this thing is very close.
Well, we knew it was going to come down to Florida just as we knew it was going to come down to Ohio last time around. The real thing that bothers me, we've seen so many attempts at voter suppression. What has been going on in Ohio about, you know, whether you limit the amount of days that people can vote absentee, all of those kinds of things. I mean, really an attempt. Now, the courts have stopped some of that. But I would hate to see us get to a point on election night where there's scandal about people weren't allowed to vote, closing polls early, losing ballots, all of those kind of things where people are standing in line for 8 hours in America to vote. Those kind of things should not happen this time around. And if they happen, and particularly in those states that have Republican governors and Republican secretaries of state, I'm going to be very suspicious over that. And, yes, we could end up with lawsuits the day after the election being filed in several states.
I'd hate it, too. And if I were a candidate, I'd want to win because people really want me, not that I suppress somebody else's vote. I agree.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to talk about here, in all seriousness, and it's a question that no one can answer for me. You two have very different opinions, and each time we bring you on in this election cycle, it gets a little more heated, and yet you respect each other. You respect each other's positions. I know that you're friends. Why is that not possible anymore on Capitol Hill?
You know what? I've wondered that same thing. I go back to the days when John Tower and Jim Wright, opposite sides, one in the Senate, one in the House, were great friends who could go and have a drink after they had a great discussion in battle. I think we're so entrenched now, we don't want to listen to anybody with a different opinion. And you cut them off before they even have a chance to say anything. And so you see the jockeying going on for the microphone, who's going to come out and diss the other one. And that's what it's all about now. And part of that is appeal to this base that we keep going back to, Democrats and Republicans.
Base being the operative word, perhaps.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, it, beautiful. So I don't know. I mean, I respect Bill. I mean, we certainly disagree on things, obviously, but golly, I mean, he's a great guy.
Well, I think, and likewise. I think one reason they don't, and people who've lived in Washington and served in Congress have said this, that one change, and there's no, you can't snap your fingers and correct this, but people don't live up there anymore. You know, they get on the plane on Thursday, they fly back, they fly up on Tuesday,
That's
Thursday.
True.
They don't know each other. You know, they don't run into each other at other events and see each other, covering things. So you get to know people. And I remember Chet Edwards saying this one time, the former Democratic congressman from Waco, and said, you know, I think he did have his family up there at the last, as I recall. Yeah. And he said, you know, we're on a baseball team with other people who are Republicans, and you just get to know people.
William McKenzie writes for the Dallas Morning News. Bob Ray Sanders writes for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Gentlemen, it's always interesting. Thank you so much for being with us.
Glad
to be here.
Today's show was engineered by Justin Martin. Joe Bilotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer with help today from Lindsay Connect. Learn more about upcoming programs and download the podcast at kera.org/think. Email comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.